As was mentioned, I'm Steve Norberg, and the title of my talk is Intercropping Irrigated Corn and Soybean Systems, Soybeans for Silage. I wanted to mention my cooperators at Washington State University. We have Don Llewellyn, who's a livestock specialist, Steve Franson, state forage specialist, Keffi Desta, soil fertility specialist, and Shannon Nybergs, our economist. Well, the goal of this particular research was to decrease the protein costs, particularly for the dairy and beef feedlots, and diversify the cropping rotation typically found in operations. Typically in our area, we have a corn triticale rotation that goes on year after year after year. There's no dicots or legumes in the system, and over time this may create a problem. And we also want to create a more balanced silage feed, particularly with the protein. The experiment was set up in a way that we were trying to see if there was a way that we could incorporate soybean into the silage without decreasing yield. We knew that farmers were not going to be willing to accept a yield drop, and so to do that, we decided we were not going to drop the corn population or move it just from where a standard is. So the corn population was at 93,823 plants per hectare on 76 centimeter rows. The plots were six rows wide. And what we did was we planted soybeans crosswise with that at 15 centimeter rows at 1x, 2x, and 4x rates of the corn population. In 2012, the soybeans were planted on June 13th and June 15th. And in 2013, we had some significant rain events that kind of altered the experiment. We planted the soybeans on June 20th, and 2 weeks later, in July 1st, we got the corn planted. And so we'll talk about how that affected some of the results that we found. The factorial arrangement that we had for treatments, the soybean varieties that we selected was a group 1 soybean variety, and then we had a group 7 soybean variety, which obviously won't produce seed in central Washington. This research was done in the Columbia Basin, which is kind of a highly irrigated, intensive agriculture area in Washington. The soybean seeding rate populations that we had, again, were 1x, 2x, and 4x of the corn population. So that made them at 93,825, 187, 650, and 375,300 seeds per hectare. So getting into the results, this is what the soybeans look like on September 24th. You can see here that there's a significant difference in the size of the canopy, the leaf size, and so I wanted to just give you a little look at that. We did monitor monoculture as well as intercropped yields so that we could compare those. And one of the goals that we had was we wanted to catch more sunlight early. If you're going to increase yield, you got to figure out how you're going to utilize a resource that typically is being underutilized. And so go after that. You can see on the right side a lot less ground than you can on the left side in the control. And so that was one of our goals. So again, the rain not only impacted the planting date, but also the emergence in 2013. So I threw this slide in there. And if you just concentrate on the lower one there, particularly the 2013 soybeans, you can see that the emergence of the monocrop was 53.9, and also the emergence of the intercrop was 40.2. Now, even in 2012, where we had 87% emergence, we still saw a little bit of a drop in the intercrop down to 75%, so about almost a 10% reduction in emergence in the intercrop competition. But So kind of keep that in mind. We'll talk a little bit more about that, but I still think we found some real interesting results in 2013, even though we had some of these differences. So first I wanted to show you the monoculture soybean yields that we received in these plots. And so we got the seeding rates across the on the x-axis, and we got the total dry matter production on the y-axis. And you can see that we had an significant interaction between the 2 years and the maturity groups. And so if you look at the first line on the top there, let's see if I can get the pointer going here. So here you can see that we had more of a curvilinear relationship in 2012. And just the fact that those soybeans are such large soybeans, I think, has an impact on the desired population for a forage system. And so in 2013, where we had significant reductions in emergence, you can see we saw more linear trend with that maturity group 7. With the maturity group 1, we saw more of a linear relationship both years, seeing it going on up to the 4x rate. And so I thought that was quite interesting. And the other thing I really wanted to point out here is that we could really have some pretty good production for silage, 12 to 18 megagrams per hectare, just for soybean monoculture alone, which I didn't think was too bad. This particular picture shows you what the intercropping looked like. Here you can see some of the leaves actually made it up to the ears on the corn, and our ears are fairly high. And this was a picture of the 93,825 plants per hectare intercropped with the 4x rate of soybeans, which was 375,300 seeds per hectare. So I thought that was quite interesting. Get a little closer look into the canopy. Again, you can just see here the soybeans covering the ground and catching any particular sunlight that made it through. The other thing that I noticed was that there was, the little grassy weeds at the bottom of your cornfield, they didn't appear in the intercropping treatment, and so they weren't a problem. The percent soybean in the silage has influenced by year and soybean planting rate. So when you look at the intercropping seeding rate in 2012 to 2013, you can see that in 2013 we had a higher percent soybean incorporated into the intercropped silage. Again, these rates aren't really high. We would blow in all the situations 12% of the total silage with soybeans. And but even with that, I think you'll see some interesting results as we move forward here. But you can see that the part of the reason why 2013 was so different, remember how we had the delayed corn planting date? So that gave the soybeans an advantage. And so we were able to get higher levels of soybean into the intercrop treatment in that kind of a scenario. Looking at different maturity groups, you see that the maturity group 1, the blue line there, was not as aggressive of coming into the silage mix as the maturity group 7. So to me, I would characterize the maturity group 7 as much more aggressive intercrop treatment than the maturity group 1. Looking at land equivalent ratios, everybody wants to know, did we find a synergistic activity with incorporating the soybeans into the intercrop mix? And maybe you're not familiar with the land equivalent ratios, but basically it's a summation of a comparison of the each crop compared to the control, which is without the intercrop, and then you add those together. Anything above 1 is considered a synergistic activity, and you can see that, we had a little bit different response in 2 years. First of all, I want to say that the maturity group 7 had a positive value both years. In the second year, we actually got statistically different than the control. However, in the first year, even though it was at almost about 1.08, it was not significantly different from the control here. So, but it was much better than the maturity group 1, where we saw that in the first year, we actually looked like we almost had a negative response here. In the second year, the maturity group 1 actually looked the best treatment of all. Okay, I'm trying to make sense of this and saying, okay, how do we graph this together and how do we learn how much soybean can we incorporate into the silage mix and find an optimum level of soybean in that mix? So what this graph particularly shows you is that between 6 and 10% of the silage, so this is level here, x-axis is the percent soybean in intercrop silage, and here you have your land equivalent ratio. As you can see, the land equivalent ratio increased up to about 6% of the soybeans in the silage on this year. Again, I think at the low levels of soybean in the silage, we really didn't have a positive effect. You had to get up to about 6%. Once you got the 6 to 10%, I think that is the optimum level of soybean that you want to have in the intercrop silage to get that synergistic activity. Okay, we also took out and grabbed the corn and did corn yield off of those plots to try to see how we were affecting the grain. We knew the dairy farmers were not going to be happy if we took out a lot of corn out of their silage. And so here you can kind of see that on a relative grain yield, we plotted it here. Again, one would be a control. Anything above that would be a plus, and anything below that would be a negative. And so percent soybean in the intercrop silage, you can see that, again, that sweet spot, probably about 6% soybean in the intercrop silage optimized the grain yield. So actually, we did have a little bump in the grain yield as we intercrop soybean in the silage in the second year. So as we look at the 2013 data, you kind of see that this is the we have soybean planting rate across here. We have the corn grain dry matter is this one line here. As you can see, we saw a little bump with the 1x rate. 2x rate, we matched the corn yield for the control. And the 4x rate, we decreased the corn yield. So that kind of tells us what's going on with the corn. With the total silage yield, you can see these two here, 1x and 2x rates, we actually had significantly higher yields than the control. This line here particularly shows the percent corn in the silage. As we got more soybean in the silage, obviously the percent corn will drop. So that was just in 2013 that we did the corn grain stuff, so I showed that. Just to kind of give you some more looks at what happened to the grain, we went in and took in there, well, we had the grain, we decided to do some harvest index, grain protein, and grain test weight. Again, just looking at the maturity group 1 verse 7 in the year 2013, we saw that the total forage yield was not significantly different between the two maturity groups. Again, the group 1 being less competitive on the corn, it had a higher grain yield than the group 7. It also had a higher harvest index and also a higher grain test weight. But the one advantage the group 7 had was it had a higher grain protein content in the corn grain. I didn't expect to see a difference in the corn grain protein content by intercropping, but we received one. And so that was kind of an interesting plus. So in conclusion, the LER was positive and peaked when the soybean content of the silage was between 6 and 10%. And intercropping with maturity group 1 soybean did not reach a soybean content of 6% unless it was planted 2 weeks prior to the corn. A maturity group 7 soybean planted at the same time as corn, the LER peaked at 1.14 with a seeding rate of 375,300 seeds per hectare. And maturity group 7 soybean planted 2 weeks prior to the corn, the LER peaked at 1.16 when the seeded at either 93,825 or 187,650 seeds per hectare. And in 2013, the maturity group 1 had a higher grain yield, harvest index, and test weight than maturity group 7. In 2013, also, we had corn plots intercropped with maturity group 7 had a higher corn grain protein content than with maturity group 1. And monoculture soybeans produced 12 to 18 megagrams per hectare in a double crop with triticale. With that, I'm happy to answer any questions if I have time. Yes. You know, the main reason we went perpendicular is we was trying to my goal was to do two things. One was to cover the ground as fast as possible, and the second goal was to reduce the inter-row competition. If you plant it right with the row of the corn, you know, you're going to have more. So I was avoiding seed in the row and trying to cover the ground as fast as possible was the thought process that I went through in selecting this.